Welcome to the Michael Yu Podcast. We have a very special guest today, the managing broker for Oakwind Realty, Arlene Chang. She also happens to be my sister.
Hello, everybody.
Yeah, so it's really great. We're doing a family pod today here on the pod. So we're really excited to have Arlene join us today. Arlene, why don't you share your story of how you became a managing broker?
Okay, how I became a managing broker. Well, I started my career in real estate, I guess 10 years ago or so. And started as an independent agent. I didn't want to ride the coattails of my younger brother. If anyone wanted to know, I'm older, but look younger. So did everyone want to ride the coattails of Michael and, ran my own independent resale business. And then Michael and I had an opportunity to work on a development together, and we did that successfully. And it was from that point on, we decided to work together in our resale business. And after that, basically, I had gone to school at BCIT and graduated with, honors in the professional real estate component under marketing communications. And so I had the education behind me to challenge a managing broker exam and move towards that area of real estate and, kind of become a managing broker within a short period of time. That's how I became a managing broker.
Awesome. So Arlene was an independent agent for about 6 or 7 or 8 years, right?
About 8 years.
Yeah, 8 years prior to becoming a managing broker. And she's been the managing broker of Oakwind Realty, our company here, for the last 5 years, or since the inception, since day one.
Yes, yeah. Since inception.
It's pretty crazy, eh? Do you want to share, the start of, being a managing broker, like how is that? What was the start of it like? What was the learning curve?
It really is a new way of thinking about the business. And, you kind of have to just learn on your feet and kind of be able to draw from your previous experiences and provide, really good, solid advice to your fellow colleagues. And that's kind of how I became or learned how to be a managing broker, was just immersing myself into it, trying to learn as much as I could through all the courses that would have been available, speaking with other managing brokers, trying to get involved in the real estate community. Those types of things all kind of helped me learn how to become a managing broker.
You sit on a board.
Yeah. I do, yeah. So I sit on the professional committee, a professional conduct committee on the board, and we look at, professional conduct complaints, and we review things that may go awry in certain transactions, and that's been a huge help in learning to, problem solve and deal with issues as they come up in this industry.
Yeah, so the managing broker role is a very, very, very important role. It's a really huge part of what a real estate brokerage actually is. It's almost a brokerage personified. The managing broker's role and duty is to serve, support, educate, and make sure that everyone stays in line with their contracts for every individual and independent agent that we work with in the company. So it's a huge responsibility. And, Arlene has been doing it for the last 5 years. What's the most common question that agents ask you?
Did I do it right?
Okay.
I think a lot of people, when they're in situations, they want to make sure that they're covering all their bases and just making sure, did they do something or did they not think of something that they should have thought about? For me, it's a lot of listening and understanding what the situation is and, putting myself in their shoes and making sure that, they did indeed do everything that they're supposed to do.
Yeah. What's the most challenging part of being a managing broker?
Good question. I think the perception out there in being a managing broker is that it's not a perception, it's the truth. We take on a lot of risk. So essentially, all of the liabilities, everything that every agent and everybody is doing out there, at the end of the day, I'm pretty much stuck on the hip of every agent. If an agent's in trouble, then, it's also my responsibility. And I think that's kind of the biggest challenge is kind of, you know, I really embrace that risk, and I really embrace that because it just makes me make sure that we're working with our agents and trying to protect them as much as possible, because at the end of the day, I'm just the big mama bear, and that's what I want to do.
Yeah, so speaking of that, you know, taking care of all these agents and kind of juggling a lot of things, how, like, from a time management perspective, like, what strategies do you use, you know, obviously, to, because you're working with so many different people every day?
Yeah, you know, it's a lot of time blocking. So, you know, I have team meetings with every kind of quote unquote department every day. And basically, I leave myself open to help agents, you know, at different time blocks during the morning and the afternoon as well. And then hopefully reserving a little bit of some time to work on, you know, large business matters or things that, you know, will help our brokerage move to the next level, whether it be a new education series or if I'm planning the next monthly meeting, you know, making sure that those are planned in advance to make sure that we have good quality content that we're giving to our agents.
Yeah, I think, you know, Arlene, it came from a background where, you know, she became the managing broker. She kind of learned through experience, you know, with our small crew when we first got started. So why don't you share the story of how we started? So Arlene is also the my partner alongside of Morgan Brown at Oakwind Realty, our real estate company that we have here in Vancouver. So why don't you share the story, like the origins of Oakwind?
The origins of Oakwind through exactly. Arlene's eyes?
Yes.
All right. The origin of Oakwind. So we started out, and we were individual agents as well, working in different brokerages. And I think, at least my experience was that I was always a little bit too scared. You know, I was a little bit too scared to go into the office because I didn't know anybody. I didn't really want to talk to my managing broker because I didn't want to seem like I didn't know anything. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think that was kind of my experience with brokeraging or brokerages, is that, you know, I didn't know what I was really getting because maybe I was too scared to utilize the services that they had. But at the end of the day, I just didn't feel comfortable. I didn't feel that there was, you know, people that I could, that necessarily wanted to get to know me or anything like that. And so I think the impetus in starting was really to change that and create an environment where, hey, I'm not afraid to go into the office and everyone's going to say hi to me. And I'm not afraid to, you know, ask somebody a question for fear of sounding silly. And that, you know, there's this huge collective of minds that have so much experience to share that can only make you better. And I think that's kind of why we started. And so we started in a small office, 1,000 square feet, IKEA tables down the middle. Me and Mike had a fight about getting a reception table. I wanted to spend $1,500. Michael wanted to spend nothing. And so, you know, that's how we started the agency.
It was really funny because some people might call me frugal, pretty, like, I just hate waste. And it was really funny, I think. Arlene and I, I don't know if you guys have ever watched like Storage Wars or any of those kinds of shows. Arlene and I went to Able Auctions, an auctions company, and like bought a bunch of furniture from there, like used office furniture with these, I'm doing like a motion with like a paddle right now. And then we were like whispering like, oh no, not over 25 cents. Like
we lost a lot in that auction, trust me.
Yeah, I was like, no, our hard cap is $10. And so, you know, that's just how we got started, you know, and the reason why we got started is obviously to build a really strong community around us. And then I didn't really know what to expect. Like, what did you, like, before you even got started, like, what did you expect? Like, we're gonna do this, like, what was going through your mind?
You know, and I say this even now, like, I think of ourselves as, you know, it's an intimate experience. Like, I think that that's kind of what I thought it was going to be. Michael hates the word when I use the word boutique, but that idea or that sentiment that, you know, where everybody knows your name and, you know, we truly know one another, and that's kind of what I thought. And even here when we sit, you know, 300 agents in, I still think of ourselves as that intimate, small collective. I know everybody's name, and people feel, I hope at least, feel that they can come to me at any time or come to any of the support team at any time, and they can feel welcome and they can feel like they belong somewhere.
Yeah, you know, when I first started, we started because we just wanted to try something new, and we wanted to, like, have a new experience. You know, we were selling real estate. Arlene and I have been partners selling real estate for a long time before starting an agency. And I don't know about Arlene, but I really fell in love with, like, working with agents, like, and learning about their businesses and helping to make little tweaks and little changes and seeing the growth of people, like, just that are surrounding us. And it's kind of, like, amazing to see, you know, all the people that we've been working with over this time and how much they've grown, right?
I agree.
Yeah.
Yes.
Before we started, Arlene had, like, no kids. She was, like, 8 months pregnant or something like that.
Yeah, my son is, you know, and it's funny because Morgan, our other partner, she says, oh, every time I look at Lucas, who's my firstborn, she's like, that's how I know how old our agency is, because he was born literally the year we started.
Yeah.
And I was pregnant with my feet up with a big gulp on the desk, Mike yelling at me like, why are you drinking a Coke? You're pregnant. I'm like, you don't know what cravings are like. You know, and yeah, that's kind of, you know, where we started.
Yeah, I just remember, you know, Arlene being like, when we first started, Arlene was like 8 months pregnant or something like that when we started the company in July or something like that with our first other agent other than myself. And I think Arlene was like 6 months pregnant or something like that.
Yeah, well, Lucas born September.
Yeah, so. And so basically just, you know, we're hauling furniture up and down. Arlene's kind of like directing traffic. Her husband and my brother were like building furniture and I was hauling things in. It was, you know, it's such a, you know, I just think so fondly back to those times. It's pretty cool, like, just seeing the whole, like, just thinking about how the whole journey's gone and where it's going to go moving forward. So let's redirect it back to managing brokering. So it's really interesting what's happening right now with the, like, with the managing brokers in BC and in Vancouver. It's pretty, like, it's a very much of a, you know, I want to say like an older crowd, would you say?
Yeah, you know, it is something in the industry right now that I think even council and the industry is very aware of, is an aging demographic of managing brokers. You know, for sure, I can say I'm one of the youngest ones, maybe the youngest female ones for sure, sitting at any managing broker forum. And, you know, there is going to be a big change in terms of leadership and who's going to be at the helm in the industry over the next few years.
Yeah. So why would someone want to be a managing broker? Like, why would an agent that has been practicing real estate for a few years want to be a managing broker?
Yeah, I think if you want to be a managing broker, you truly have to be in the spirit of being a teacher and being a listener. And being that person that people can rely on, kind of that cornerstone. You know, I think there's great satisfaction in being able to help a fellow colleague out of a difficult situation, or help them save a deal because of some advice that you gave them, or just get them, be that person that they can vent all their frustrations to, that really listens, and then all of a sudden they go, oh my God, like, I just, that's all I needed. And, you know, I think, you know, that's why I do it, is just so that, you know, there is this element of giving back and this element of making sure that people are getting something from, you know, your education or anything else. That's why I do it. And, you know, I think if other people are thinking about doing it, you know, at the same time, you know, I found it to be a great change from being a realtor in terms of, you know, that 24/7 demand from your clients. I mean, you still get that from your agents, but the whole, you know, going on tour, doing open houses, you know, I think, you know, people have to realize how much out of your own physical and mental state that a career as a realtor is as well. And as a managing broker, I think there is a little bit of that reprieve mm-hmm. in lifestyle.
Yeah, you're probably not going to get signatures at 11 p.m. at night.
No, no, but I will answer my phone. Will answer my phone.
Yeah, so, you know, it is really interesting, the demographic of what's happening with managing brokers in Vancouver, because it's such an essential and vital role. I think it is the most important role in a brokerage. It's really the face of the, you know, of the brokerage in terms of who you're going to turn to when, you know, when shit goes down, like if I can swear on this pod, you know, that's who you need in your, who you need to back you up, who you want in your corner. You know, like us realtors, we're like Rocky and Arlene's like Mick, you know, like behind, like encouraging us and getting us to
make you chase chickens.
Yeah, makes you chase. That's right. Lift that boulder. So yeah, it's really great. And, you know, Arlene wears a lot of different hats here at the company. She's managing broker, partner, sometimes janitor here. And so like that. So now to kind of switch over the hat to a partner of a company, of a growing company. So what are some of your roles here at Oakwin other than being the managing broker?
Sure. One of the main roles that I play, I guess, is working with our team. So, you know, our internal team is very important to me and to Michael and to Morgan and, you know, whatever their professional growth is. So working with our team to really figure out, you know, what they want in life and what their goals are and also just, you know, making sure that they're in the right places and that they're really the ones, you know, because Michael, Morgan, and myself and other people can't be everywhere or speaking with everybody. They're really, our team is the extension of us. And so, you know, I spend a lot of time, you know, trying to work with our team and get them in speaking Oakwin.
Yeah, we love our staff. It's just something that we just love. I just love our staff so much that we have, like, our front desk reception, our conveyancers, our accounting people, everyone, you mm-hmm. know, the property manager, all the people we have at the company. It's like it's really nice to see. You know, we used to do these staff meetings, and we'd have like me and Arlene there the staff meeting, and then we hired one person, and then now it's like we do a staff meeting. It's like there's a lot of people. It's really cool to see, and everyone's like, you know, being independent and happy. And we were, you know, we obviously hire a lot of younger people too, and seeing them grow and flourish, it's pretty cool, right?
Yeah. Just as you know, we want to see our agents flourish in their business, we want to see the people on our team feeling fulfilled and, you know, growing as well, right? It's one of our big core values is growth and learning.
Mm-hmm. So I'm gonna switch now to another hat, which is like Arlene is my big sister. She is 2.5 years older than me. Why don't you talk a little bit about our family, like how many
sisters? Yeah. Okay. Well, you know, I think for me, at least, my family or our family is, you know, has really shaped a lot of where we are today. So we have, there's five of us in total. So
five brothers and sisters.
Yeah. So my eldest sister, so she's number one, then I'm two, Michael's three, Alex is four, and Liz is five. So five siblings. My mom and our father, who passed away quite a few years ago now.
Yeah, 14 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I have my own family now. So I've got you know, a lovely husband and two kids. So that's kind of the roll call of the family. What else do you want to know?
What was it like growing up with, like, you know, four brothers and sisters? Just,
yeah, I think, you know, we grew up in a household of entrepreneurs. Our parents were also in real estate, and I think we ended up really being each other's teachers and parents at the same time. You know, I remember my older sister Adrian would take us, we'd go biking and we'd bike to the library and we'd pick up a Pizza Hut and eat pizza at the park. And that was pretty much what we do. We'd go get books, read, and bike back home, and, you know, lived a pretty carefree, awesome childhood in my mind. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, Arlene never got spanked. I got spanked a lot. So.
Yeah. Well, you no, know, I had to, you know, my parents didn't like to wake up in the morning. So I woke up every morning. I don't know why, I'm not even an early bird, but I would wake up, and I would wake up the entire family to get ready for school. I'd line up 4 pieces of white bread with the Cheese Whiz down the line. I'd make everybody their sandwiches in the morning, make the coffee for my dad, wake him up. Can you take us to school? We're going to be late. Please take us to school. We're going to be late.
Yeah, I still gag every time I see Cheese Whiz. Yes, we had Cheese Whiz sandwiches, and that was like our, with like the thinnest slice of ham. That was like our lunch every day. So it's kind of a, but it's good. So Arlene has been taking care of me my whole life, essentially, and it's been like really cool to just, you know, it's really funny. We've gone through like,
yeah, lots of,
we've gone through everything.
Lots of stages.
Yeah. So, like, you know, Arlene and I went to, you know, obviously elementary school at the same time. And then we went to high school at the same time. And then even when we went to college and university, we were at the same colleges and universities at the same time. And so, like, it was, you know, it's been pretty cool to see. And, like, and now we, you know, even after university, Arlene gave me one of my first jobs as a dishwasher. So Arlene used to, you know, and this is something that I learned. Arlene is a super hard worker. She used to, why don't you share, like, you know, your college days?
Yeah, sure, college. So, you know, I think, you know, we grew up very lucky, and I don't think there was ever an expectation that we necessarily had to pay for school ourselves or anything like that. But, you know, because my sister did it, that meant that I had to do it. So, you know, right after high school, I walked around Carisdale, brought my resumes around, and ended up getting a job at Bean Brothers Cafe. And then the next day, I got a job at Shoestring. So I would work at Bean Brothers Cafe. I'd open the shop 5:45 to 1:45. And then I'd walk across the street to Shoestring's and work from 2 to 6. And then I thought, oh, I have all this extra time at night. So why don't I get a serving job too? So I started working at the Royal Vancouver Yacht Club and started working night shifts from like 6 to 11:30. So essentially, I would work from 6 to midnight every day. For the summers, and I would pay, you know, then that's how I put myself through university and all the extracurriculars and schooling that I went through. So, you know, working hard and working long hours was never something foreign to me. It's pretty much how I think.
Yeah. And so when you have you know, it's funny because a lot of, you know, my mom's friends and like our, you know, people, you know, they see Arlene and I were working, we're doing this company thing, and they're like, oh, your mom must be very proud of you. And I always say, like, you haven't met our eldest sister, Adrian, is a genius. She's, like, super smart. She's way smarter than both of us. I think we both admit that. Way smarter than both of us. She's, like,
more charismatic than me, for sure.
Way more charismatic than me. And super intelligent, very bright. She's just really a real shining star. And, you know, she's the CFO of this big, 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 big company in Vancouver. And she's fantastic and so smart. And everyone likes her. You know, we kind of carved our own way. I kind of followed my sister around quite a bit growing up. So when she was working at that cafe, she got me a job as a dishwasher. And it was so funny to just like to work side by side together. This one fateful night where it was just the two of us in the kitchen, and I was like, oh, like Arlene and I, we worked long hours. Like I actually worked at Bean Brothers Cafe, which was a coffee shop, a restaurant, and I worked at Safeway, which was a grocery store. And I worked at Subway Sandwiches. Like, I don't know why, all the same time. And basically, I was so tired. It was just after a very, very, like, long day at Subway, like, hustling as a sandwich artist. And then I came to Bean Brothers, and I was, like, working as dishwasher. It was a particularly slow night, and I was just exhausted. I was so tired. And Arlene... I was like kind of resting against the counter because it was just Arlene and I there. And I was just like being lazy. I'm like, oh, thank God. Like, no one else is here. Slow night. We can relax. We can breathe. And then like Arlene has this like, she's like slams a giant sack of potatoes like right in front of me. She's like, hey, peel these potatoes. And I was like, there's no one back here. Are you crazy? And she's like, peel those potatoes. And so like the burlap sack, I undo it slowly. I like take out the potatoes, and I started like shucking these potatoes, and I felt like Beetle Bailey, like like shucking potatoes. And I was like, with peeled potatoes, you put them in a bucket of water so that they don't spoil overnight. So I was like shucking these, like peeling these potatoes, putting them in, like kind of tossing them lightly into water. And then Arlene was walking by, and I guess there was like a little bit of a splash of the bucket, like of the water on the floor. She's like, what the heck are you doing? And then she asked me to like she's like, mop this stuff up. Someone's going to slip back here and break their neck. And I was just like, well... like I was like, it's just the two of us. Can like just be careful around this water. She's like, this isn't proper.
Risk management, yeah. Right from the early days.
This isn't proper. You clean this up. I'm gonna break my neck. Yeah. And I remember I was just seething. I was like, I just can't wait until like I get my revenge on you. That was one of our first tastes of working together. We've been working together pretty much ever since.
I guess so.
Yeah. So tell me some of the challenges, you know, working alongside your little bro.
Oh, okay. Where shall I start? You know, the one thing that I will say that has made it easy is that I think we parallel in our work ethic. So that's the one thing. The thing that's made it hard is Michael is, I would say, yeah, a visionary. And so, you know, I often picture us, you know, that he's in a chariot with this huge vision of where he wants us to go. And I'm that person running behind like a little person getting dragged in a million directions and trying to keep up with, you know, where his gaming mind is taking us. And, you know, I think that has been a challenge and, you know, kind of the pleasure of, it's been this double-edged sword in working with Michael, because, you know, it's definitely something that I don't have, is that, you know, huge, huge forward vision thinking, but I'm the person right here, like, making it happen. And so... You know, that's always where we are. We often fight about that, like, we can't do that yet. And he's like, yes, we can. I'm like, are you kidding me? And, you know, it's up to me to figure out how it's going to all come together. But he's already there. And I'm like, okay. But then we got to do all these X, Y, Z, right? And so that's been the challenge for me.
Yeah, I think, you know... It's funny because we're like, we have the same DNA, we have the same parents, you know, but we're just so different. We're mm-hmm. like, I wouldn't say we're like, hopefully more like peanut butter and jelly than like oil and water. You know, we complement each other really well. It's just from my side, you know, kind of working with, you know, Arlene, who's, you know, my big sister, and Morgan, who's kind of, feels like a family member. Like we're so tight. We're just together this morning. Like Morgan right now, she'll probably be listening to this pod, and she may have her baby by this time, is like literally ready to pop. But we still met like every Thursday morning. We meet to just talk about our business and where it's heading and our plans and stuff like that. So we met at Morgan's house today, and it's just like it's like a family meeting every time. You know? Yeah, it's just like getting together and talking about the things that we want to do and ideas and stuff like that. It's pretty cool to see. I have a nickname for Arlene that she loves.
I wondered when this was.
So Arlene's nickname, like for everyone, like for like the staff and for all the people, is she's the chief. So Arlene's the chief of the company. So kind of the chief, kind of like you know, like in an Indian band who has the big headdress. But but I call her, it's funny, I call her the old stump because she's like, she just sits there and she like types on her computer, she writes notes down, and she does, she's just like an immovable object.
So I'm thinking,
and so she's just like, it's like, you know, I guess I think you can say these types of things to your family members because you can just be like, you just cut right to the chase, you don't need to like you know, mince a whole lot of words, like, and I think it goes both ways. I've been called many names by Arlene. I've been called an idiot, I've been called stupid, I've been called yeah, everything. And we can just tell each other to shut up, it's great. Yeah. But you know, it's just, it's such an adventure to be able to kind of journey with someone for this period of time, and build something. So let's say someone was thinking about becoming a managing broker, okay? What kind of tips would you give that individual that is just getting started?
Tips to a managing broker just getting started. I would say that, you know, the main thing that you should do is listen. The number one thing, and ask a lot of questions. So a lot of times, you know, if you're presented with a situation, you don't necessarily get all the facts from how the agent might present it to you. But if you are persistent in listening and, you know, asking some more probing questions, you will generally get down to the point of, you know, what the crux of an issue is. And oftentimes that's going to be the easiest way for you to figure out the best solution or the best advice to give the agent is through your super active listening, I think is the most important thing. And Michael just spilled water all over himself.
I just spilled water all over my crotch.
Yes.
Yeah. So, but never mind that. So, so obviously the, you know, that position is one that is, it's going to be a very important thing for brokerages and to nurture young talent and get new blood and lifeblood into that. I think it's a really cool job too, you know? And I think people kind of pass it off as kind of like, oh, like there was this assumption, and I don't, you know, it's a total myth. It's not true, but there's an assumption that managing brokers are kind of like failed realtors, like they couldn't cut it, right? What do you say?
I don't know about that. I think that, you know, a lot of there's a lot of, maybe the perception is that managing brokers is towards an end of a career, maybe, you know, that, you know, it's not for somebody who is younger. I don't know if that's, you know,
I definitely don't think that's true. You know, because it's like a coach.
It really is. You know, I think of myself more of a coach and a partner than, you know, anything else, and an educator really at the end of the day. And somebody who is really, you know, to be honest, I really enjoy being a managing broker. I enjoy it far more than being an active realtor. And the reason why is that, you know, you can, you know, you're in a position where you can be objective about a certain situation, knowing, you know, all the rules that, you know, that are prescribed, but being able to then take that knowledge and distill it down to, okay, this is how you should handle it because you've listened to somebody's story and you've been able to really get down to the heart of the matter and help them through a difficult situation. And, you know, when you are able to do that, it's just like, whew, that was good. That felt good, mm-hmm. You know, and like, whew, you know, when you hear from a consumer that, you know, it was help, everything was done really well, you know, that it was a difficult situation, but it was dealt with well. Like, you know, that to me is music to my ears, you know. That really helps the profession move in a positive direction. And that's really what I'm passionate about too, is just, you know, as the profession, we have to have a really strong professional standard and, you know, really good way of dealing with problems, because that's what we are here to do, is, you know, we're solution finders. I think that's a lot of what I do every day, is finding solutions for people.
So what would you say, obviously you coach and train and work with a lot of agents, and, you know, from a huge spectrum of backgrounds and experience levels, what are some of the common traits of the most successful realtors?
Common traits. I know a lot of very, you know, I think the one thing that all of the most successful realtors have in common is that they truly have a goal for what they want to do, and they commit to it and they actually do it. So even if they might not be perfect at something, that they're going to still go ahead and do it. So if they said they were going to, you know, meet up with five people this week, they are going to meet up with five people this week. It doesn't matter. Or, you know, they might not have ever done this type of a transaction, like a new construction transaction, but the best agents will still want to tackle that and then, you know, feel like they have the support behind them to help them through if they need to, but they're not scared of anything.
So they have like a fearlessness.
Yes. Yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
So, you know, you talked a little bit about goals, and, you know, that's something that we're really like, you weren't really obsessed with them, like, you know, like when you first got started doing goal setting and stuff like that, but how has that matured?
Yeah, I was like, you know, we should do this. And it resonated with me to a point until the year that we did a vision board. And, you know, I did this vision board and I was like, oh, okay, you know, I don't want a big house. I just want a little house. I want, you know, I don't know why, but everyone keeps on talking about Dubai. So I want to go to Dubai. Right. So I put these pictures on just a piece of paper and had it in front of my desk. And, you know, for whatever reason, and I guess it's what you put out is what you get, right? For whatever reason, an opportunity came up to buy a house. I wasn't looking, but essentially it was on an auto search for my client for like a year, who wanted a Vancouver special, something very specific. And I kind of wasn't paying attention to it anymore because he was kind of a lower lead. but I happened to just like, okay, I'm going to look to see what's there for Iqbal today. I'm just going to look. And it was this little house on a corner lot. And I was like, oh, maybe I should go look at this house for myself. And so all of a sudden, over an open house weekend, and, you know, I'm scrounging and talking to Mike. I'm like, how many closings do we have? I need to buy this house. And so we got a house that year. And same thing, for no apparent reason, my brother-in-law ended up he's a fantastic city planner. He got recruited to go to Abu Dhabi to be one of the city planners for the Sheikh. And my sister-in-law moved there with him, and we ended up going to Abu Dhabi and Dubai and Istanbul that very year to visit them. And so it was just this amazing power of, you know, kind of just putting out whatever was in your mind into a physical space. And it happened for me, and that was amazing.
Yeah, you know, when you, it's really, there's something that happens that, you know, there's a lot of law of attraction people, and, you know, The Secret and all that stuff. And yeah, you know, I've listened to it, and yeah, I have a shrine for it. No, I think to some degree, you know, having a clear idea of what you want, even if you don't know kind of how you're going to get there, but a clear idea of what you want, it kind of can point you and direct you in the right way. I'm probably much more fanatical about our goals and goal setting than Arlene, and I try to really milestone and track how we're going. Like, I knew how many sales we needed to do to get my first house or my first con like my first condo and how many sales we needed to do to get our Arlene and I our first houses and cool stuff like that, you know, and so I was always tracking everything. It's really funny what kind of happens with you know, when you put it all out there. Like, for example, Arlene's house is like was about 10 blocks away from my house at the time, and Morgan's place is like across the street from from my place. So like it was like good to kind of, you know, it's all kind of happens. And I think, you know, there is some bit of destiny to a lot of it and kind of how it works. Even I was looking at like old family photos, and Arlene and I are like just together in like every family photo. It's kind of weird, right?
Yeah, it is weird. Yeah. And Mike kind of, you know, back to the goal thing, Mike kind of always gets annoyed with me because I don't know why. I have this blind faith that that I'm just going to have this wonderful, awesome life. I think it's because my mom told me I had big earlobes, and so that meant that I was going to have money for the rest of my life. And so I've kind of carried that feeling. And I don't know. I think, you know, having that kind of security in yourself too is an important thing. Just knowing that, you know, it's gonna be okay no matter what. I can always rely back on, I can work 12 hours a day and it's gonna be okay. You know what I mean? So
well, that's a huge part of it, you know. There I was just reading a book, it's called Imagine It Forward by Beth Comstock. It's pretty cool. It was given to me by one of our staff, which is, and it talked about confidence and how it almost trumps competence in a lot of ways, when it comes to when you especially when you're just getting started in something. And like, what do you think about the role of confidence?
Confidence is huge, and like I just said, I think, you know, a lot of times that's helped, like definitely in my life or in, you know, the career choices. You know, being a newer agent, just being confident, even though I didn't know anything, that you know, I portrayed that I knew a lot. And if I didn't know, I would find out. It's the same thing for being a managing broker, you know, wading into this role with other colleagues who are managing brokers who have been in the business 25, 30 years. You know, that's not an easy forum to enter as somebody who's much younger, who doesn't have maybe the experience. But I think that, you know, maybe some of the confidence that I brought to it was, you know, elevated what they thought of what I could do, or that I would be able to deal with situations, even though I was younger, even though I didn't have maybe the experience. But they felt like whoever was on the other end of that phone call, man, they sound good and they, you know, are asking the right questions. So yeah, we're going to get this resolved because at least this person seems like a confident, competent person. Right. Mm-hmm. So I think confidence is a huge, huge thing. And you know, oftentimes a lot of people think I'm taller than I am, but it's not. I think it's because I just am a confident person.
She is very confident, and it's really annoying. She's like, "Oh, everything's gonna be fine." I'm like, "You don't worry about anything." Like, I am like it was funny. We were selling a project, in like 2008, where there was this huge financial crisis, and I had sleepless nights. I was worried. I was wringing my hands. I was like, should we like leave this project and give it to like someone that actually can do the job? And we weren't selling anything. And I was just like so like wrought with fear of like our huge blunder and failure, that we were going to like look like the world's worst realtors and like everything was going to suck. And then I would come into the sales center every day and Arlene would just be like, watching Shrek and cleaning the showroom, and where we knew no one was coming in that day, and just kind of getting ready. She's like, someone's gonna come in today, someone's gonna buy a place today. And I'm like, you're a psychopath and I hate you and we're screwed. And she always just had that like belief, you know, and that confidence. And she was just like, this is the best project in the, you know, in East Vancouver. This is the most fantastic product that, you know, the layouts are great. And she was just presenting it so amazingly. It almost gave me a lot of confidence. Like, yeah, like it is. And so I think that it's a huge part of what we do is that level of confidence. So I'm going to ask you some like existential life questions.
Okay.
Okay. What is the meaning of life?
Seriously?
Yeah.
What is the meaning?
I want to hear from my big sister. What's the
meaning
of life?
What is the meaning of life? Okay. I will put, let's see.
Eat the mic.
Oh, okay. Okay, meaning of life. You know, I think at the end of the day, the meaning of life, at least for me, I think, and maybe right now for me in this moment, the meaning is everything is to do with family. So, you know, if it's family, my Ogun family, or if it's my my own family, you know, everything that I'm doing right now is for them. And the meaning of life is that you have these strong bonds with people, and that, you know, whatever you instill in, you know, your child or your agent, that gets passed on. So, you know, I see, and you're really trying to nurture those things. So I see that my son, you know, is super into, let's say, art right now. And all that I want to do is to support him in that. And so, you know, we do art classes together, and those types of things. Because at the end of the day, when I'm gone, he's going to remember those moments that we went to make that, you know, clay pot or whatever it may be. So the meaning of life for me is that those moments, the collection of those fine moments, because, you know, when we're long and gone, it's going to be those other people who remember those things.
So what were some of the defining moments that you had, you know, over the last few years?
Defining moments. Ooh, tough and deep. Okay, so defining moments. So, you know, there's, I guess, maybe, yeah, definitely things that have happened in your life that, you know, kind of changed the trajectory of your life, right? And so I know Michael has shared this before, but the passing of our father happened when I was 23. And, you know, I think I would have probably been a different person if that hadn't happened. I think I would have been probably a physiotherapist working in Australia, living in Australia probably, and maybe being a physiotherapist or something in physical education, kinesiology. That's my background. I also have a bachelor in HKIN, but I'm not a physical person anymore. If you meet me, I'm just a old stump. So
I hope that sticks. really do.
You know, I think the passing of our father was a big turning point in our life where I realized, you know, really, I guess, what my role was, maybe for my family, maybe for my life, you know, to be that person who would take care of people, because, you know, he went through cancer, and my role was to do the things like massage his feet, those types of things, you know, being the caregiver, you know, while my sister was the person to like organize everything, the meds, the funerals, everything was like, you know, and so we all fall into our roles. And so when he passed, you know, one of the big messages that right before he passed is quite I guess personal, but I think very relevant thing that he said to me was, you know, that that I would have to think big, and everything that I wanted would happen because I just needed to believe in that I could do something big. And I never really knew what that meant, you know. I always thought, oh, maybe I'll open a restaurant, maybe I'll, you know, like, that's big. But maybe he, you know, knew something from bigger than that I was expecting of myself. And so, you know, I think maybe that was a huge turning point, you know, in terms of, you know, where my life could have gone. It was this idea of, okay, we have to do something big with our lives, right? Because that's what he told us, that told me, that was my message to me that I had to do, right? So that was a big turning point. Yeah, I don't know. I can think of lots of little nuggets here and there, but that was a big one. You know, starting a family was another big one, you know, and choosing your life partner. There's lots of things, but I would say that in terms of what probably changed the trajectory of my life, that was the moment.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's these things happen in your life, and they can. What I really took from my sister Arlene, was like taking even these tragic things that kind of happen and really trying to transform them into, like, positivity into your life. We really bond, when things bad happen, we really bonded closer together as a family, and we really were just, we just bonded a lot closer together. We were close, but like we never faced any of that level of turmoil, and it was it was a very surreal time. I always thought Dad was gonna get better. I always thought he was gonna like miraculously heal himself. I never thought he was gonna die, and so like I was almost in denial. And even after he died, I was like. Yeah, it's just I think some people take it really emotionally. I was just kind of, I felt very numb. And so, I think, when you go through that, and I tried to turn it into a positive because I saw what my sisters were doing. And so obviously, I just kind of, I don't know if I just shut my emotions or feelings off, and I just started working. Like, that's all I did. I like never stopped. Like, for probably like 10 years or something. Like, just every day. Remember how much we were working?
Yep. Insanely.
Yeah. I was just on this mission. My dad asked me to like try to help to take care of my sisters and my family and, my mom and my grandparents, who were all alive at the time. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm like on this mission. I gotta like do this. And so like it was really just like a call to action. And and then you just like every day, I woke up, that's what I thought about, I did it, and I would go to sleep, I'd just keep doing it until I went to sleep, and then I would wake up and do it again, and again, and again, and again. And so it was really, it's just a very, it's really kind of a surreal time, but yeah, very defining as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's kind of interesting, because I feel like both Arlene and I, maybe it's like our family, like when things get tough, we just default to like hard work. Like, we faced a ton of problems. We faced tons of issues, from, starting in, just buying and selling homes for people, and now running the brokerage, and just doing all these other adventurous things that we're doing. And we just default to like, okay, old stump.
who's gonna outwork us? I don't think anybody's gonna outwork us. So exactly. That's how we'll win.
Yeah, we're not the smartest. We're not the most graceful or intelligent or charismatic. There are certainly people that are much like, even our agents that we work with every day. I sit down with them. I'm like, you are just so charismatic. You are so magnetizing. But like, I don't know if they have like, I don't. But and it's pretty. It's just amazing to see, and I'm just like, man, this person's like a superstar. But like, I think we just default to that. It's just like we can just like hunker down. We can just endure. So just kind of seeing that as a kind of a common trend. Not that sexy though.
No.
Yeah, it's not like any kind of like slick trick or anything like that. It's just like hours upon hours upon hours. Actually, when Arlene and I were buying and selling homes for for a living, and that's what we did primarily, I remember we wanted to kind of get out of our environment in the brokerage that we were in. So we actually rented a separate office, we would call a satellite office, away from the agency, because we just kind of wanted to practice on our own. And it was really interesting. You want to describe that office?
Yeah, it had no windows, which we're like, oh yeah, that's fine. A lot of people are always like, even now, today, in our office now, Mike and I don't have windows in our offices. In our holes.
Yeah, exactly. We're like in the caves. And so we just like, and it was funny. We walked into this office. We were looking around. It's like this, like the lights were just like this, like laboratory lights. We were walking around. It's like a small office. And there was like no windows. And like, we were working with another agent at the time. She's like, there's no windows in here. Are you guys crazy? You guys are going to go crazy. I was like, no, this is perfect. And so we're like, let's take it. And so we took that office and we worked there for years. And I remember many times with our, you know, Arlene and I, we kind of parted ways with that partner. And then we started with, an assistant. And we would be working there. We'd all be working there. And then we'd kind of look up at the clock and be like, 11 p.m.
Oh, my God.
We gotta go home. Like, what the hell? What time is it right now? And everyone was like, oh, shit. Like, it's 11? Like, we had no idea, no concept of time. Like, we're just...
It's like we're in Las Vegas,
but like a lot shittier. We're in Circus. Yeah. We're not in the Bellagio or the fancy place. We're in old Vegas. But yeah, it was just like those good old days. One of the other defining moments, I think, was when we first started Oakwin. And I remember I was lifting our... we bought these like recliner chairs from Able Auctions. Lifting them, I kind of sat them down. And I was sitting we had a little like recliner area, and then it was right across from our reception area, which actually wasn't. There was no reception desk. It was like an IKEA desk.
It was actually JISC, $99. Glass top.
Yeah. So that JISC is the lower version of IKEA. And so it wasn't even IKEA, it was JISC. And so Arlene was sitting at the reception desk. I was sitting at the kind of in our lobby in like this makeshift used furniture recliners. Green and checkered. And Arlene was putting up the business license with a little hammer, she tacked our business license to the wall right beside the reception. And it was just the two of us, and we looked at each other, and Arlene was like, so... now what? And then we had no realtors. We had no. It was just the two of us in the office. Nothing. We like did not know how to convey a deal. We didn't know how to process a listing. We didn't know how to do anything. And I remember just looking at her, and we're just kind of looking at each other. It was like a blank stare, and kind of like, what have we done? Stare. And then we just, and I don't know why I said this. I was like, okay. We're going to build the biggest and best agency in Vancouver. And it was just like, I don't even know where that came from, because it was like literally two kids that are just like, I was like, I think it was 29 or something. Like two kids. And we're just like, okay, that's what we're going to do. And yeah, that was like almost 6 years ago now. That was like pretty crazy,
yeah.
Hey?
Yeah.
Yeah. It was just like one of those moments in time. And it could have been, we could have said, I could have said, like, I don't know. And then what if I said, I don't know, maybe nothing would have happened. So, like, it's kind of cool to see things evolve and change. So if you were to give a new entrepreneur or a new realtor or a, just a new business person some tips on what it is and what they can do to be, to be successful and have a great start, what would those be?
Yeah, as much as we wanted or had kind of a what do we do now kind of moment, we did take the time to do research. We did do a lot of market research to figure out where could Oakwin be in the marketplace in terms of what was the need. The immediate need in the brokerage business, or what the immediate need is in any business. And so, we saw business coaches and really spent a lot of our time researching and understanding the marketplace in which we were going to enter. And so I think for that successful entrepreneur or realtor, just knowing who you are and who you want to be and the landscape in which you're going to compete in is kind of a really important exercise to, start your business. You have to start with some sort of a plan. It might not be the perfect plan. It doesn't have to be the perfect plan, but you do need an idea of what it is you're going to contribute to people, right? And I think if you can figure out what that thing that you're going to contribute to society, contribute to life. It's going to be, it will be your guiding star into a lot of things that, you know, that your business is going to be built on. And I think that's, you know, the one piece of advice that I would give to people thinking about starting a business is do a little bit of research and, you know, figure out what it is that you have that you can contribute to this world.
I think that's really important. You know, we kind of, I don't want to say that we fly by the seat of our pants, because we don't. Like, we did a buttload of research. That's a very intelligent way of putting it. We did, like, incredible amounts of research before we started the brokerage to just get an understanding of the landscape, what the immediate needs are, what the problems were, the industry were, where we thought we could fit in, and where we would, put ourselves from a you know, service and price perspective, and just put in, make ourselves, put us in the proper place to be successful, and make sure that there was a need for it. You know, if there wasn't a need for it, we wouldn't have done it, right? So I think you know, that was a really important thing, and to kind of get ready. So obviously you talked about the meaning of life being family and contribution. So how do you balance, because you're obviously a very, you know, running a brokerage and managing broker and a mom and a daughter and a wife and all the rest of those things. So for the women out there, who have a few different hats, what are some tips and tricks for them?
Yeah, I think, you know, at the beginning of anything, I think, you know, we all think that we can do it all. And I think that there's, you know, a lot of pressure that you put on yourself that you can do it all, because you want to be able to be successful as a mom, as a wife, as a business person. You know, and at the end of the day, it was something that my little brother told me. Mike told me, don't lie. Like, you know, I, you know, was setting up expectations for myself that weren't realistic. You know, I was setting up expectations for my family that I kept on breaking. For example, I'm going to be home at 5 o'clock. Why am I telling my husband I'm going to be home at 5 when I'm actually going to just be at home at 6 every day? I'm just continually going to disappoint, right? And I think it was just that kind of wake up call that was like, okay, I have to know where my limits are. I need to know what I can tell people, because, you know, if my business partners know that I need this vacation at this point in time, they're not going to hate me for it. I just have to tell them. And vice versa with my husband. If I have to go into work because of this, if I tell them up front and let them know that this is what has to happen for X amount of time, you know, that's a lot easier to tread than always feeling like you're being pulled in a million directions. Like, oh, you know, I'm supposed to be home at 5 and now I feel bad because I'm not home at 6. And, you know, I just disappointed everybody because they were expecting me home at a different time, you know. Or the same thing for the office. If they were expecting some sort of presentation or something and I wasn't able to get it done, then, you know, you're faltering on that side. And so kind of, you know, I think the balance is really knowing what you can do and being okay that you can't do everything, really, because it's just not humanly possible. And that the only expectation that you can do anything is do everything, that comes from yourself. And so if you make the conscious acknowledgement that it's okay, you don't have to do everything, you can be really good at X, Y, and Z and be super successful at X, Y, and Z, then that's what it should be.
That's really great. And because I'm enjoying this pod so more, we're going to do a bonus question because, you know, it's really fun. Like, I've been loving doing these pods. Like, it's just been, like, I feel so excited to do them. I love doing these pods and learning more about things, learning about more about people. I want to hear, like, a funny story of, like, the company or something that happened here with your colleagues or with, you know, in any kind of way.
A funny story?
Yeah.
Which one? Oh my gosh. I'm trying to think. What? Oh my gosh. The funny story. The funny story of... Okay, this one's funny. Oh, I don't know, but maybe Morgan already told it, so I don't want to tell it again.
Just tell it. Maybe they didn't listen to Morgan's.
Okay. So, you know, we learn from our mistakes, and oftentimes the mistakes that we make make things better. So, you know, Oakwin was never wasn't always Oakwin. It was Opus. We started as Opus Realty, and we got issued a legal letter that we infringed on somebody's trademark, and down went Opus. And you know, I think the funny part of this is that, you know, we were trying to rethink of a name for the company, and you know, to all our agents out there, you could have been known as Owl and Oak Realty with owl signs, like the, what is that, Bubblicious? The hoo-hoo? that owl with for sale signs of owls hanging for sale signs around the city. So instead of our beautiful golden O, you could have had Owl and Oak.
With a bunch of, I was really into mascots. See, this is exactly why I need partners like my sister Arlene, Morgan, because otherwise the company would be like an owl based. I would be wearing an owl suit right now as I was doing this pod. I would be on like, you know, Shaw Cable, like TV, in an owl suit saying, hey, come join this brokerage. Like, and so if it wasn't for them, that would be the company, and everyone that would be in the company would be wearing owl suits or something like that, or having an owl pin. So yeah, that was a really funny story. And I think, like, you know, everything happens for a really compelling reason, and trying to turn the negative into the positive, I think, is something that is really huge. I was just talking to a new agent today, and he's just having this like fear of rejection. I'm like, you know, you should really love the rejection, because it's getting you closer to the yes. And, you know, you should really, really learn to love it, and because it's going to turn out for the best at the end. So on that note, I want to thank Arlene Chiang for being part of our podcast today.
Thanks.
And we'll see you next time. If for those of you that are out in the podcast realm, if you do not mind to rate, like, and subscribe to this podcast, please give it 5 out of 5. And I keep telling everyone to review, and there haven't been more reviews flowing in. So please write a little review if it's good. And yeah, we'll see you next time on the Michael Yu podcast. Thank you.